Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Once again, we have another great show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport, where we round up all of the sporting action for this weekend. I catch up with Ken and plenty of chat with him, and we talk to Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers about the NFL, and we're getting to the business end of it and Super Bowl just around the corner. And Declan Drake gives us a roundup of all things happening in GAA. Jordan Lee is our special guest. He's a Paralympian who competes in the high jump. He gives us his background and everything that's coming up for him. And I catch up with David Kelly of the Irish Independent as we review the weekend's rugby and have a look forward to the Six Nations Championship, which starts next weekend. Alan Cawley, as always, rounds up the show with all of the FA Cup action. So plenty for you to listen to this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. Download now wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm good. I was very entertained this week, I have to say. Fair play to you. You're dancing, Ken, I'm going to call you now, for any of our listeners who didn't quite see it or see my tweet that went out. Ken, you did a bit of dancing during the week. Didn't realise the camera was live on Eurosport, and there you go. And I have to say, I watched it and looking at Jimmy White, he's looking at you going, "What are you doing?
What? I know. Well, you know, to be honest, I thought we were on the ad break, you know?
Yeah.
And I had the earpiece in the ear, and I was waiting for the countdown to say that we were live. Nobody said anything. And the music was going away. I was happy as Larry. Just came off after beating Steve McGuire. And did a few dance moves.
The moves, and, the moves.
Funny thing, Jimmy started dancing with me as well. And even though they started asking me questions, I didn't think we were live at all. I thought,
I know, but Jimmy only started dancing out of like, oh my God, sympathy. Oh, geez, what's he doing? Oh my God. At least you didn't say anything to him back. Can you imagine if you were blasted out the curses or something? But no.
Oh, no. I got a bit of stick for it. But it was just very funny, you know. I just couldn't believe it. And when they told me that I was live, I said, "We're live, aren't we?"
Yeah. I know.
It's a bit like Eamon Dunphy on the football that time, you know, with Bill O'Hurley.
Yeah, I know. That was fantastic. It was very good. It was a great moment. And for any of your listeners that haven't seen it, get on YouTube or somewhere like that. You'll find it. And
I saw it made the Mirror Sport as well during the week.
It doesn't surprise me. Dancing Ken, Ken. Yeah, that's what you are. No doubt about it. You weren't dancing last week, though. We took care of you. Good match.
Yeah, no, it was a great match, wasn't it?
Yeah, great game.
A great match. I think Arsenal, you know, they were... even though it was late, you know, 90th minute goal. I think United would have been really happy with the draw. Mm. But I think Arsenal probably deserved the win. I think United, from United's perspective and the fans' perspective, they set off too much in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, when they got the second goal and it went 2-2, they sat back too much. But Arsenal, I thought Arsenal played well. They're playing really, really well at the moment. And these couple of games, I know they lost last night in the FA Cup. They left out 5 regulars. But I think the couple of games with City coming up, the first one on February the 15th, they're going to be the sort of story of who's going to win the Premiership, I think, this year.
No, absolutely. I know it was a great match and it could have gone either way. And I did think, like, United are playing great football, there's no doubt about it. And they're back to, you know, the top level that they need to be at. They're not far off with a couple of new signings and a few different things going right. But Ten Hag has them right, there's no doubt about it. They're in good shape. But we are playing well, I have to say.
Cause
in other years, they wouldn't have kept fighting to the end like that and they wouldn't have got that goal. And I know last night was a disappointment. They had chances last night as well and it was only 1-0 against decent City side. So obviously the title race is the big one for
Some really good excitement. You know, young players, you know, playing up front. I mean, that lad, the English lad that scored a wonderful goal with his left foot. What a strike that was, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, really good. And, I think I think they're really good side. They're playing really good football. Odegaard is a great player as well. I like him playing.
You know, it's a good feel to the whole thing. There's a good, you know... The squad just seems to be clicking quite well. So we'll see what happens. We're not going to get too carried away. What are you, were you watching any of that stuff with McIlroy and Reed during the week and the golf? I know much of a golf fan.
I saw
him,
blanked him, didn't he? And he threw the tee at him. I don't know what it was all about.
I watched the video.
I think he went over to say hello, and he just completely blanked him.
Well, it was on the practice range, you know, and you can see the video if you look it up. But it's on the practice range, and Rory and his caddy are over there, and they're practicing away. And Reed comes over, and he shakes hands with the caddy, and apparently he wished him a happy New Year because it's the first time he'd seen them since, you know, New Year, whatever. Yeah. And as he's coming over, you can just see Rory just goes down in his hunkers and goes into the bag and starts taking something that bag, basically turns his back on him, ignores him, and doesn't shake his hand, which is fair enough. And Reed just turns and he's kind of smirking, and as he turns away to walk away, and then he turns around again and just flicks a tee over him. But you see, it was a LIV golf tee. Rory was interviewed about it afterwards, and he was like, you know, I don't feel any reason to acknowledge him, you know, and you could just feel the undercurrent of it too. But your man Patrick Reed, he doesn't seem to be a very likable character.
No,
anyway,
he's not.
He was stirring it up. There's no doubt.
Yeah, he's a bit of a stirrer. Yeah, even when he was on the Ryder Cup and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, he likes that little bit of controversy. And apparently he's not very well liked on the tour at all.
Absolutely,
I believe. Was he done for cheating as well?
There was something about that in the past. There is history there, no question about it. When he was young, especially when in the amateur ranks coming up along, I believe there was lots of questions around his sportsmanship, let's say. So that's why I think he wasn't particularly liked. But yeah, you're right. But I mean, a bit of it, there's only a shot between them. On the leaderboard, Rory's 7 under, he's 6 under, so they were hoping that it might get to the stage where they'd be going out together, although it's weather delayed, which you wouldn't expect over in Dubai, but it's going to probably not finish till Monday. But
yeah, I think it's quite admirable for Rory the way he's been quite outspoken about LIV golf. You know, I totally agree with him. You know, I don't like it. You know, I wouldn't like it if it came into our own sport, you know, because it would split it up.
Getting legs,
you know,
though, Ken.
It's quite honourable what he's done to stick with the PGA Tour.
I agree with you, and any of the golfers that have, I agree with you. But, you know, the only problem is now. They're getting a bit of traction, you know. They've got a TV or streaming company, CM Media or something in America, that are going to be showing some of the events now, and you know, it's like everything. If these things start to get coverage, all of a sudden people start to watch it. Then all of a sudden, it, you know, gets legs, and then there'll have to be some sort of an agreement, and then they'll win. Unfortunately, you know,
and
the lads who took 150 million would be laughing, going, "There you go, lads."
Yeah, I think it's quite a long way down the road, though, Reg. You know, I don't think they should have been allowed playing the Masters or any of the majors. I think, and I know the PGA don't have the power to do that, but I think they should have brought some rule out where they weren't allowed playing the majors, and I think that might. Make them think again. Some of them wouldn't, because they won't have a chance of winning any of the majors, but some of them certainly would, like, you know, Dustin Johnson and Cole, the big guys who, you know, Cameron Smith and stuff like that, the big guys who have chances of winning multiple majors.
Yeah,
I think that might have given them second thoughts. But the fact that they're allowed playing it in the majors, well, then they're pretty happy to do so and take the money and play in those other sort of non-meaningful events.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we just have to see how it all unfolds. Hopefully it doesn't go down the road of destroying the game, which is always the fear, with money taking over.
I think when you have people like Rory in the game and some of the others, you know, that are sticking, Ram in particular as well, you know, the top guys that are sticking with the PGA and supporting them, I think that's very important. If they lost those guys' support, then you would be in trouble, you know.
Yeah, big time, big time. Mm. Okay, now you're a big tennis fan as well.
Djokovic and Tsitsipas.
Yeah, and a bit of controversy again around it with Djokovic's father being filmed with supporters of Putin. It's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
I know, it's pretty embarrassing, I think, for Djokovic. Yeah. You know, you have to come out and apologise and try and explain what had happened.
Mm.
But the tennis authorities down in Australia told his father to stay away from the match there, the semi-final. He wasn't allowed to go and watch him, so he had to go and watch it from his house and on TV. Yeah, it is embarrassing.
Yeah.
And particularly with all the controversy over Djokovic and the vaccination and not being allowed to play.
He just needed to go smoothly, didn't he?
Exactly. That's the last thing he needed.
He sure he was on the phone to his owner like, oh no, what are you at?
What are you doing?
You're killing me here. Come
on.
Just
when I got back in. I'm going to get banned now for support too.
Exactly. Quickly mention, before I let you go, Fergal O'Brien, he's in the last 32 of the shootout.
Yeah, he's playing today just after one. So he's flying the flag. He's playing a young guy, Julien Leclerc, from Belgium. So he has a good chance. You know, if he wins that, he'll be into the last 16. And, you know, anything can happen over that 10-minute frame. It's very exciting, I must say. It really is.
It's
an exciting
interesting
to play in. It's horrible to play in because, like, you know, you're rushing around. But it's very exciting.
Now it's time for football. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
Ah, very good, thanks. Very good. A bit disappointed after last night, I have to say. Good game of football. Our eyes are firmly on the Premier title, but I would have liked to have gotten that little victory last night as well against City. Just wasn't to be. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think it's the end of the world, to be fair, Reggie. And like before the match, I was really fascinated just to see in terms of the team selection and how they would go, because I felt the position Arsenal are in at the moment, and certainly when you look at the league form that they're in, that they should be focusing heavily on that and almost, I wouldn't say throw the cup games. Of course, you want to win every game and keep the momentum up, but I just felt that they'll never have a better chance in terms of the league and the position to find themselves in at the moment. So if they went with a weaker team last night and lost, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. Now, when I saw the teams, obviously Man City went very strong. Arsenal made a couple of changes. I was just thinking that's probably what was in Arteta's mind. Now, it was still a very good game, very competitive game. Obviously, only the odd goal with Ake. So even though Arteta, I'm sure, is disappointed to lose the game, I don't think he'd be thinking it's the end of the world this morning, Reggie, because the bigger fish to fry in terms of the league. And when you think of the two games coming up against City, I don't think he wanted to show his full hand either last night. So I don't think he'd be devastated this morning. Yeah. Obviously, he'd be a bit disappointed to lose, but I still think they're in an unbelievable position when you look at the league.
Absolutely. I know, there's no doubt about it. We were. Pep was quick to point out and play it down a bit as well. He doesn't want anybody getting excited and thinking that City are there. He was saying, no, it's Arsenal's to lose.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, there'll be mind games going on, and that the psychological warfare has started already, Reggie. Even look at the handshake. It was fairly frosty at the end and all, so Pep knows that Arsenal are a serious threat to them, and he knows the job that Arteta is doing, and I think he's been a bit rattled by it, to be honest with you, because they've been so, so good. I don't think even he envisaged that Arsenal would be as good, and he knows that they're a serious threat. So I think we'll see a lot more of that come the next 2, 3, 4 months in terms of the psychological games that are going on with them and comments that will be made in the press and the media. But I've no doubt about it, behind closed doors he'll be telling the players and he'll be telling everyone. It'll be a different message that's probably going out to the media, but behind closed doors what he's telling the players is that they have to seriously raise their game if they're going to overtake Arsenal, because you look at the performance again with Arsenal last Sunday against Man United, they were absolutely brilliant. I know it was only 3-2, but they deserved to win overall. The last half an hour they totally dominated. I'd say, I think Arsenal, their first 11 and the form that they're showing at the moment, I think is better than Man City at the moment. I think they're a better team than them at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see how that all unfolds. Arsenal fans not getting ahead of ourselves, that's for sure. I want to talk to you about the news that Sean Dyche has been on the verge of being confirmed as the new Everton manager, trying to steer them away from that relegation zone. It would seem like a good appointment.
I would think so, Reggie. Yeah, I have huge respect for Dyche. I always have. You look at him in terms of his pedigree at Premier League level, experienced manager. He's been there, done it, on limited resources with Burnley, and done such a fantastic job over such a long period of time as well. So he's been out of the game, obviously, for a little while. I'd say he'll come back energised and refreshed. And I think it's a very good appointment. When you look at the couple of names, I suppose, that were favourites for, it seemed to be down to himself and Bielsa. And I just felt with Bielsa, obviously a brilliant coach, as we know, but just because of the position that Everton find themselves in at the moment, there's so much chaos, so much noise on and off the pitch that I just think if you bring in Bielsa at the moment, he'd only add to the chaos and the noise. Whereas I think bringing in the likes of Dyche, an experienced head, very measured, very calm in his approach, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. I just think he's a great appointment for Everton at the moment. And they're such a big club with such huge pedigree as well over the years and history, that it would be a shame to see them go down, and it is horrible to see what's going on. And terms of the fighting and the toxic environment that's been created there by the owner over the last kind of 4 or 5 years. So hopefully he can go in and try and remedy that and fix it and get them away from the bottom.
Think he can?
I do, Reggie, yeah, I do, because as I said, he has a lot of experience, and I just think he'll galvanise those players and get them together, and I think he's the right man just at the moment to do that. I just think with Lampard, he obviously doesn't have that experience, and he was just constantly seemed to be fighting fires, where I just think with Dyche, he's just far more measured and balanced in his approach, I think, and the fact that he's been there and done it as well, that'll stand him in good stead, and I do think he'll get out of it. Prior to this, I had them relegated if Lampard had to stay there, but I think the fact that they made the change and him coming in, I think they'll get out of it.
Okay, well, hopefully they do. I'd like to see them staying up, there's no doubt about it. It is FA Cup time, and I suppose a couple of the fixtures, one to look at in particular would be the Wrexham one against Sheffield United.
Yeah, and you think of Wrexham, Reggie, yeah, all those years ago, Mickey Thomas and that famous goal against Arsenal.
Yeah, but it's got an extra kick to it because of the whole Hollywood element. You know, I've been watching that programme. I'm really enjoying it, actually. You know, the Wrexham documentary about the lads taking them over. So I suppose that adds to it.
Yeah, of course. And I think with the FA Cup at the moment, we're trying to create the stories rather than the stories being there in front of us because of, I suppose, it has lost that bit of glamour and all the focus is on the likes of the Premier League and the Champions League. But I still love the FA Cup. And these are the type of games, and these are the reasons we fell in love with the FA Cup, is the underdog and the lower league team going against the higher placed team and causing the upset. And hopefully Wrexham can do something similar. The only thing is Sheffield United are riding high at the moment in the Championship and going really well. And he's doing a really good job there, the manager. And but again, what could help Wrexham, they're all there focused on getting back to the Premier League, Reggie. So he could make changes for that game because, again, the Championship is such a hard league. When you're going Saturday, Tuesday, it's a tough slog, so it is. So there could be an opportunity there where the manager of Sheffield United, Higginbottom, might actually rest a few players, which would play into Wrexham's hands and give them a bit more of an opportunity. But yeah, it would be great to see a couple of upsets in that. Like, you look at the one this morning, Atkinson Stanley against Leeds. That'll be another one where there's a potential banana skin for Leeds. And they're the stories that made us fall in love with the Cup. So hopefully we don't lose all the glamour of it.
Yeah, absolutely not. United have Reading, of course, as well. Ince going back. And I saw something in the paper this morning. He was talking about how Ferguson sacked him in the car park of a golf club. So there's still obviously feelings there with him. But he'd love to go back and get some sort of a result.
Yeah, the bitterness is still very fresh in their minds. Yeah. Sounds like crazy, yeah. And Ince, of course, as we know, a feisty character. And Ferguson did get rid of him. He obviously thought he was getting too big for his boots, Ince, but he was a great player in his day.
He was.
Obviously, he's looking to do something similar in a management level, but he's been out of the game for a long time. Found it hard to get back in, but Reading gave him the opportunity, and he did well last year when he came back in the Championship, and they're going okay now. So it's a big opportunity for him, especially against United, his former club. Again, we're talking about the lower league team trying to topple one of the bigger teams. So it's a huge opportunity for them, and it'd be a massive scalp. And you might look at Man United now. I'm not sure how Ten Hag will approach it, but it looks like they've already 1 foot in the final in the Carabao Cup, yeah, going well in the league. He might use it as an opportunity to make changes and give lads a game as well. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm always wary of predictions in the FA Cup nowadays, Reggie, until you see the team sheet, because you're just not sure what the managers will do for each club.
Okay, my next guest has just signed a deal with Puma, which is great to help enhance his career. He is, in fact, a cousin of mine. I'm delighted to welcome to the show Paralympian Jordan Lee. Good morning, Jordan. How are you?
Hey, Reggie. How are you getting on?
Getting on great. Good to chat to you. It's been a while, but fair play. You're going strong, as always. Congratulations on the deal. Great getting signed up with Puma.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really, really happy with it. To have a massive brand like Puma along your side, helping you on the way to big competitions like World Champs this year and then Paris 2024 next year, it's a big bonus.
Absolutely. Well, we have something else in common apart from being related. I was sponsored by Puma as well when I played rugby, so they one of the few players that were Puma sponsored, so they provided me with my boots and all my gear, so it was great. Listen, everything's going brilliant, and to give people a little bit of a background on yourself, of course you were born with a foreshortened left arm, and in your teens you competed in basketball for Ireland, and you were the first one-handed player to do that. Achievement in its own right.
Yeah, so basketball was my first love in sport, mainly because my dad was a really good basketball player back in the day, playing over stateside. So it was only natural that it was going to be time for me to actually want to pick up basketball and learn how to play myself. Mm. And I remember being 5 years of age, having my first basketball training session, and things just kept on rolling and rolling from there, really. And I would get up early before school with my dad. We'd go shooting some hoops and go swimming because we were so determined to really play basketball at a high level, which is something I ultimately ended up doing. And I'm really proud about still to this day.
Oh, it's an incredible achievement because, let's face it, it's a hard enough game with both hands, and to do it as you did and the way that you did to the level that you did was exceptional, is the only way to describe it. And I've obviously haven't seen the videos of you performing that Charlotte would have sent me over the years. That's your dad, of course, Charlotte. Yep. I would have, granddad, sorry, should I say, I would have... really understood what level it was to be for you to be, get to that level and how difficult it was. But then, of course, a chance meeting with Jason Smith at the Disability Conference persuaded you to try other sports. And what made you think to go that way? I know athletics is also in your background.
Yeah. So I was 16 at the time. I had been invited up to the CARA Seminar for Inclusion. That's on every year. Mm. And one of the guest speakers at the event was Jason Smith, who you just mentioned. And he encouraged me to try out the various different sports that were going to be on the following month at the Paralympic Expo. So in my own words, I said, sure, look, I'll go for the crack and I'll see what it's like. And I found out that I actually had quite a bit of potential in three or four different disciplines. And I suppose really why I wanted to try something new and really give it a go was because I've been playing basketball my entire life. And I don't think it was a case I was getting bored of it, but I'm a very competitive guy and I wanted to give something a new sort of focus and challenge. So after the expo, with some good thought and consideration, I decided that I'd go with the sport of high jump. Mm. I did probably be the sport I'd enjoy the most and possibly the sport I'd be best at too, because with my basketball background, being able to jump high and catch boards and go for slam dunks, I thought in my own mind at that stage there was some bit of a correlation and connection, but I was definitely wrong. High jump is a very technical sport, and I find that sometimes people who watch athletics in different disciplines, I think they could be sort of harmlessly ignorant towards exactly how high somebody is jumping or how fast somebody is running. It's just an amazing sport, really. So I'm thrilled to be doing this now as a career, jumping over high bars, looking like a silly salmon while doing it in the process.
I don't think looking silly is ever a part of it. It's an incredible skill watching it being done. I have to say, and you in your first, so you kind of competed in 2017 and you're only 4 months training at the high jump, and within a year you'd won a bronze medal in the European Championships. That was some achievement.
Yeah, so I had my first international competition when I was 17, like you say. Yeah. But the Europeans actually didn't come around until the following year in 2018. Mm-hmm. So for the year 2017, it was just kind of trying to find a base, really, and just trying to find a kind of coaching team based around me. And the goal for that year was to qualify for the Europeans the following year, which is something that we ultimately did and won a bronze in the process. And believe it or not, I was actually disappointed with myself.
Yeah.
because I thought I could have done a lot better. But looking back on it, I think it's fair to say I should be quite happy on it.
Absolutely. Well, I do believe it because I know the kind of pressures that you put on yourself. But tell me, how's everything going now? Tell our listeners what's next. What are the targets? What are we aiming for this year?
Yeah, it's quite a big year ahead. World Championships now in July in Paris. So hopefully I'll be seeing quite a bit of Paris over the next couple of years. The following year then in 2024 is when the Paralympic Games are going to be on. So that's obviously the main sort of target to qualify for that, but also perform well at that competition. But there's a lot of smaller mini objectives to reach before those competitions. And that starts off with getting up every morning and just making sure that you're having a solid quality session every single day.
Yeah,
it's those small goals that really turn into the larger goal, and it's just all about staying consistent, being accountable, and working hard with the dedicated team around you. And I'm very fortunate to say I have a fantastic support team around me, and then obviously Puma coming in as well to give me a big boost. But locally, with my two high gym coaches, Alan Delaney, Tomas Griffin. Two S&C coaches, Kieran McCabe and Shane O'Rourke. Just very grateful to have a fantastic support system by my side. So we're going to try push the bear quite literally and raise it every single time we go out there.
Well, fair play to you. Well, I wish you the best of luck, Jordan. And once again, congratulations. Great to get that endorsement with Puma and Sport endorse arranging that for you as well. Good luck with everything. I'll be keeping, obviously, a close eye on things and keeping an eye on how things are progressing this year. And we'll get you on again and maybe you can fill us in a little bit later on in the year.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Thanks a million. Okay, time to turn our attention to rugby now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Irish Independent journalist David Kelly. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie.
Great to chat to you again. It's been a while. Good to touch base again. I'm reading your article, your comments, interestingly enough, in the Indo this morning about the Six Nations. Of course, it's coming to that time of year again. We're around the corner and huge excitement in Ireland. Everybody I speak to thinks we have the World Cup won, never mind the Six Nations, and maybe we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, are we?
Well, that wouldn't be unusual for Ireland to get ahead of themselves, especially in a World Cup year. But it is interesting as we head into the Six Nations, which is I think bedeviled on a number of levels by other stuff going on in the game. I mean, in Scotland and Wales, you have appalling incidences of sexism, and which has been ignored by the men's game. It has seemed in England. An attempt to possibly investigate how to end the gravest crisis to face the great game you played, Reggie, in terms of the concussion crisis coming down the road. They failed miserably in their first attempt to try and get over that hurdle. In Italy, we have an international player banned for a racist incident. And generally, when you look at rugby at the moment, the international game, you see one of France's leading rugby figures is in jail for corruption, and that affects the World Cup later on this year. It's not a very pleasant sphere at the moment, international rugby. I find myself being drawn more to the women's game and the club game, and the fortunes of Taryn Ure in the AIL. There's something a bit more pure about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, we must progress to the international game and two-hour-long international games of rugby and 10-minute scrums and bandwagoners passing by your seat every now and then with 8 points of overflowing, poorly pulled Guinness, and the games will commence and we will all be wrapped once more.
Yeah, I am interested though. I did want to get to the state of play with you about the international game. It seems every week and now there's the next thing. And as you said, this week, for some of our listeners that don't know, I mean, there's allegations of sexism within the Welsh Rugby Board. There is, as you said, a president of the French Union under investigation on corruption charges. There's, a law been brought in England. Sorry, not a law. A rule change in England by the RFU whereby pretty much overnight they have told coaches and players that they can't tackle above the waist without really giving any voice to the clubs and the coaches to express their opinion on it. So that's added to maybe, you know, South African teams being involved in competitions up here and money being very much to the forefront of the game. You know, overall, the World Rugby are trying to portray this image of morals and a game for inclusion and everything else, but it seems to be going horribly in the other direction.
Yeah, I mean, we try and separate the two. I mean, my issue with all this, I mean, I'm an ecumenical person, as you know. My big treat next week, this week, apart from Dublin today and St. Pat's on Tuesday, is Honeysuckle next Sunday. That's going to be the highlight of my weekend. Mm. I will be over in Leopardstown, paying my way, by the way. I won't be taking your free tickets. Rugby has always, since I've been a child, tried to kind of lift itself, clamber above an ivory tower, thinking it's superior to either the Gael here or those ruffians in the working class soccer game and rugby league game in England. And it can't claim that anymore. It suffers from the same foibles, scandals, iniquities that affect other sports, whether it is racism, sexism, foul play, an inability to confront, you know, that existential crisis in terms of the damage to health and safety it has caused its own players, and the refusal, a belated refusal to acknowledge that down the years. And to my mind, it is no different than other sports in terms of how it deems to address all these issues. It doesn't make it no less a compelling theatrical event when a really, really good game is on. Now, there wasn't a good game of rugby last night, but there will be good games of rugby in the Six Nations. Now, whether they're based on a gruesome gladiatorial spectacle where the hits, as they're called appallingly now, and some games, especially in Ireland, Wales, I remember a game with 300 or so Welsh tackles. Looking back on it now, it was enthralling, and you're right there on the touchline for that. But you just wonder at what cost, and you just wonder as well, is that really entertainment? I mean, 50 years ago yesterday, we celebrated the great Barbarians try, which poor old Fergus Slattery, I wish him well, he was involved in, and Pullen and Duckham and Dawes and Gareth Edwards. How many of them decided to get the ball and run headlong into the sternum of an opponent? They were looking for space, they were looking for evasion, and that was in the opening 5 minutes. Mm. We won't see that in this Six Nations. Now, all sports move on, but I think tied into the change in the tackle law, which will come, it will be waist high at some stage in the future once they plan it out properly, which rugby doesn't seem to be able to do. Maybe we will have a little bit of a return to some sense of an evasion. Something like Antoine Dupont, who seems to be the global brand leader and one of the only Jordan Larmour is another, but he can't get a game for Ireland. One of the only watchable players, I think, in the Six Nations.
It's interesting to see that's in terms of how the game is played, and there are elements of that we can get into in a minute, but I just to go back to your point, speaking on ecumenical matters, as you were bringing up, I'm in no way being a defender here, because I'm fairly critical at the best of times in things that are done with the RFU and RFU and governing bodies. But, you know, there's allegations of sexism in Wales at board level, okay? Now, let's just pick that for a moment. Surely to God, that would be the case across all sport. I mean, football hardly has very many women on their boards across the various...
Oh, yeah, no, I'm
footballs.
Not saying it isn't. Yeah, I'm agreeing. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's just been highlighted now. And then, you know, rule changes and governance at corporate level. So the GAA haven't done themselves or put themselves in good light this week with the Kilmacud Crokes matter.
Oh, exactly. And then, that's my point. Rugby is not alone. Rugby is not alone. It claimed to be alone for many years, but it is not alone. That's the point I'm making.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it is there, but it does have to change. But I just think a lot of this, and a lot of it in sport, is, you know, it's just hangovers from times gone by, and it takes, it does take a bit of time to change these things. They need to be highlighted as they are. Things that have happened in the women's game here certainly have highlighted that, and we've seen changes on the back of that, and many would say not enough changes. But I suppose progress like that does take a bit of time, and we're seeing professional contracts here in the women's game. We're seeing more effort put into them at representative level, which is all a good thing. But it takes, unfortunately, these bad things to make the change happen.
Will we win a few matches in the Six Nations?
Will we?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, I'd have to say, without being overly... patriotic, I just think that this Irish team are a very, very solid team at the moment. They're at a level, you know, we're number one in the world for a reason, and I think we're in with a very strong chance of winning this Six Nations. I know, reading your article, you kind of feel it's more a French, you're leaning towards France taking it down, but I just feel with France at home and England at home, you have to look at us as favourites.
Yeah, no, it is a toss up. That's the key game, Ireland France. I mean, you separate this year into two, and I think yes, the stability is key for Ireland in this spring. But if you have the long look, and it's interesting, it's a soccer element again. The way Wales and England dispatched, you know, the careful planning that again rugby unions love to kind of use to separate themselves from hiring and firing Premier League clubs. But I mean, it's a bit like the Premier League more and more. But I can see England and Wales getting their house in order at the World Cup, but obviously not now. It's too soon. So
can I just ask you on that, David? Sorry to cut across, but can I ask you on that, because in your piece in the Indo, I note that you have said that, you know, when the question was asked to you, can Steve Borthwick and Warren Gatland turn Wales and England around respectively, having been recently appointed, you feel that they can. I just want to question you on that. I could see what you're talking about with Borthwick, because, I mean, there's an element of madness maybe with the ruling that Jones was giving to that English squad over time. I could certainly see how Borthwick might turn around. But I'm just questioning the Warren Gatland element of it, because I just wonder, does he have the players anymore? It seems like a very ageing squad to me, with a lack of talent in key areas coming through. And I don't know how even Warren Gatland, with his successes in the past, can turn that around.
Yeah, I suppose if you're giving me one, England, because England, you know, saw with Ashton in 07, I mean, like, England can just turn any situation around, and in a World Cup tournament, somehow they just have this tournament knack. Now, Wales have a tournament knack as well. You know, they've made the three semi-finals, I think, and Ireland have never made a quarter-final. But I don't know, I take your argument. I mean, if they're lacking a bit of... if Rhys Ahmed is not there, if they're lacking a bit of a flair behind the scrum, or missing, you know, even one or two of they're already down the front row for next weekend. I think they will struggle, because they don't have that really good core that Gatty had, and even his latter years when they were probably coming down the hill even at that stage before Gatty checked out. So yeah, I kind of take that point, but I don't see them doing anything here. But the only issue is that we have them first up in Cardiff, yes. And
always,
you know, that's always a tough one. You might have James Lowe coming in cold, but apart from that, I don't see any issues with the Ireland team. Like yourself, they seem very solid. I was talking to James Ryan for next Saturday's paper, and they just seem very in control. It's almost like one of those horror movies. Everything's too quiet, still.
Yeah.
It is interesting, and
I put my head on the block now here and say that I think we're going to do a job on Wales. I mean, the bookies have us at -6. I think that's very generous, I have to say.
Yeah, they could do them by 20.
Yeah,
but it could be a really tight Gatty 300 tackles, and they win with a controversial penalty with 2 minutes to go. But I'd go with the first one. Yeah, I think they could do a number on them if they get their straps.
What about Scotland? They're kind of club level. They're producing results, which I didn't quite expect. Can they turn things around a little bit?
Not a hope.
No.
Not a hope. I don't think. I just think they're the eternal spoofers is probably a bit too much. But I just I don't like the chat about Gregor Townsend. Kind of now he didn't start it, but this kind of chat about going into France as an attack coach, I wonder would they listen to him as much as the Lions did, which didn't seem to be much at all. You know, does a coach do that over the Christmas? There's no talk of an extension. The World Cup is on. The World Cup year is utterly uncertain, and I just don't think they have the quality and really never had. And I mean, you can't trust Finn Russell, yeah. And he doesn't trust Finn Russell. They're capable of doing. They almost always stop France in World Cup in their Grand Slam year, but I just don't see anything consistent from them at all.
Okay.
Obviously, Irish eyes will be interested to see if John Cooney pitches up midstream and Ben Healy gets the game. Which again, you know, I'd be consistent on this as I was with the issues with players playing for Ireland from other countries, and I was. Branded all sorts of things, but I think 3 years is always too short for these things. It should be 5 years, and especially for players who have quite a considerable number of caps, which includes John Cooney. I know it doesn't include Ben Healy, but you know, just because somebody doesn't have a nice relationship with their out half, whoever's fault that is, I'm not too sure whose fault it is, but I find it a bit uncomfortable, and it's happening a lot. You see it in Scotland, and you know, there are a few players around. I mean, I know he was brought in for the Pacific Islands originally, but I don't think the kind of, again, the poor Tier 1 nations should be exploiting it as much. There probably should be a different regulation there. But anyway, that's rugby being rugby.
That is it. Okay. Just finally, I'm interested to get your thoughts. I mean, the RFU are under massive pressure about this tackle law thing that they brought in. I see what they're trying to do, and I agree with what they're trying to do, but it's interesting to see Johnny Sexton coming out and being against it. Many other players saying they think it's a bad idea.
Of course, he's never learned how to tackle properly in the new environment, and that's why he got his cheekbone busted over Christmas. And I've challenged Johnny on this before in a public arena and press conferences and so with people, and we agree to disagree, which is fair enough. But the RFU made a Pascal Donoghue of this. They should have really consulted a bit more widely. But it is as inevitable as Formula One and the NFL changed, that and horse racing has changed. The Grand National is not what it was. Sports have to change, and rugby will have to change. Players' habits will have to change. They haven't changed enough with the existing regulations which were brought in 2019 about the head high tackles. So sadly, even though this may seem detrimental to a lot of people, this will be brought in gradually, that there will be, you won't be able to go near the head. Not that you should be able to go now, it'll be heading down towards waist high. And you know, that's the sport's fault. And the recent years, that's the players and the coaches' fault for not changing their habits and attitudes. And it will lead to a different game.
The irony of all of this, David, is that that's how I started the game, with waist tackles. That's the way we were taught.
Cheek to cheek.
Yeah.
And I think your listeners will know what cheek, each cheek means. But yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. The cheek of your face to the cheek of another guy's ample derriere.
Yeah, it was professionalism that changed it. And you know, Matt, I had to smile when I heard Matt Williams talking during the week on radio about the fact that it was rugby league coaches that brought in this new tackle thing, blah, 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 blah. I actually remember him bringing it in himself to Leinster off from rugby league. That's where it was developed. It was absolutely rugby league tackle around 97, 98. It was brought in around 99, 2000. So we're looking at 20 to 22 years ago at this stage.
Yeah.
And the new generation have learned no other way. But like when I went to school, we, as you said, cheek to cheek, down low, around there. And there was no talk of getting knees to the head. You did get them, that's true. And we're not trying to say that you won't get concussed from that. But it seemed a safer game. You know, most people were dragging around the waist and it seemed a safer game. There certainly weren't as much talk about concussion. But look, that's another conversation for
another day.
All right, listen, as always, David, great catching up with you. Enjoy the Six Nations. We'll catch up to you again.
We always have a good argument, but I think Ireland, get some money in Ireland.
It's time for GAA now with Declan Drake.
Thank you, Reg. One story dominating the GAA world this week, and that, of course, the ongoing saga of the dying embers of last week's All-Ireland Club football final, with Kilmacud Crokes having 16 players on the pitch to defend a last gasp effort by the Glen of Derry to snatch a late, late win. For the record, the game finished 111-19 for Crokes. Shane Walsh with the goal for the Stillorgan men, who turned an early 5-point deficit into a 2-point victory. All, of course, now completely irrelevant, with the toing and froing that's gone on all week between the parties in an attempt to find, if possible, a satisfactory outcome to this embarrassing mess. As is always the case in Ireland, the blame game starts early. Was it the fault of the Crokes management for their failure to bring their players off in an efficient manner? Or perhaps more accurately, the officials on the day, particularly the sideline official and the linesman on the Hogan Stand side, who clearly failed to communicate to the referee that the substitutions had not been completed properly. It's very difficult to see a positive outcome to this sorry mess, except the fact that the rule on substitutions will now undoubtedly be changed sooner rather than later. Well, after the game and before this controversy really came to light, I spoke to the Crokes boss, Robbie Brennan, who was particularly pleased at that time to have secured the victory.
Yeah, delighted, absolutely delighted. Like, it's a bit surreal at the minute now, the way it's all finished there and the hustle and bustle of it, but just overall feeling is delighted for the boys.
You would have been all the time emphasising a good start, lads, a good start, and you just didn't get a goal down after a minute and 1-3, but you turned it around well to lead at half time.
Yeah, that was so important. First 10 minutes didn't happen for us. It was a fear, to be honest, a bit, because we probably saw that in Kilcool last year. They played similarly, where stuck in the shackles a little bit. So thankfully we managed to turn around and get ourselves in a better position at half time, and then it was nip and tuck all the way through, and still felt we left a lot behind us. You know, our scoring percentage was poor, but look, overall just delighted. They could have caught us there. They're a super side, and they could have got us.
You're all saying club is family. The way you rallied around Connor after the disappointment of last year, and he's the hero today, another fairy tale of a story.
It's if you could have written a script for today for Connor, that's what I would have wanted. The hurt and the hardship last year, and you know yourself, like, unless you're in the group, you don't really understand how hard it was for him. But so for him to be, we said it during the week, he would win us the All-Ireland, and he's done that, and I'm just so happy for him and his family and everybody. Delighted for him.
Dublin footballers return to Croke Park for the first time since last summer's agonising last gasp defeat to eventual winners Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. A new era for the Blues starts with their opening Division 2 game of the Allianz National Football League against Kildare, a team who beat the Blues in Newbridge last year before suffering relegation from the top flight alongside Dublin. The game throws in at Croke Park at 5 o'clock this evening. Pat Gilroy, of course, now back on the management team, supporting Desi Farrell. No Johnny Cooper, the Na Fianna man announcing his retirement from intercounty football post Christmas. So it'll be interesting to see what the makeup and the dynamic of this team is for this opening round game. Dublin's first game outside the top flight of the National League for 15 years. Ladies football now, and Dublin opened their Lidl National Football League campaign in the best possible fashion last Saturday with a victory over League and All-Ireland champions Meath at DCU. A good healthy crowd out there too, it must be said, and they enjoyed a 111-8 point success. Skipper Carla Rowe with the Dublin goal for a largely experimental and developing side. Well, after the game I spoke with Dublin boss Mick Bohan.
Look, it was interesting. Obviously, lots of new faces from both sides, but I suppose we didn't know where we were, because we've such a big turnover there at the moment and so many new kids in. But look, the one thing you could say is they were honest and they worked really, really hard, even though there was mistakes. But they're the little things you work on. But big energy in the camp, and we're obviously delighted to come away with a win.
And Carla Rowe obviously showing her leadership skills once again, and she chipped in with the goal very early on as well.
Yeah, look, and you know, she's had two very interrupted seasons with injuries, so please God we get a run at it with her this year and she'll get better.
And the challenge of all those new faces, integrating them into the system and the demands of inter-county football. I'm sure you've been at this a couple of months now, so you were really dying just to get today's game played.
Yeah, we've only put 5 weeks under our belts. You know, the development squads were gone probably for 4 weeks before that. So essentially, as a group, we're only together 5 weeks. Some of them were in with us last year behind the scenes, others are completely new, so trying to integrate the whole thing isn't easy, as you know, a lot of work for the coaches at the moment, but that's where we earn our gruel, or the free.
The league programme is tipped in the balance of away games more so than home games this year. You've got some very long journeys ahead of you over the next couple of months, so the importance of getting home victories.
I'm glad that didn't go unnoticed, because we would have spoken about that. We're seeing the far corners of the country this year for some reason, but look, they're part of what will build a group together, lots of time together, lots of chats together, lots of opportunities to discuss game plans, and a little bit extra time to get to know each other on a bus. So yeah, any win home or away at the moment, starting out in the league is very welcome.
And finally for me, I know you're anticipating this one, absolutely. We know who was here today from the senior players, the more established players, if you like. What can you tell us about some of the players who weren't here today?
Not a whole heap, to be honest. We probably will have one or two rejoining us, we're hopeful. You know, lots of good players in this county, some who take sabbaticals for one reason or the other, but we're obviously trying to get the best players out on the pitch to play for Dublin that we possibly can. So next few weeks will tell a few tales.
Dublin indeed are away tomorrow afternoon in the second game of the competition. They face Galway in Tuam from 2 o'clock. And it was announced earlier in the week that Carla Rowe will continue in her role as Dublin team captain for the forthcoming year. But there is a change at vice captaincy. Leah Caffrey of Na Fianna taking over there from Niamh Collins of former county champions Foxrock Cabinteely. Hurling now, and Dublin completed preparations for next week's commencement of the Allianz National Hurling League away to Waterford in Dungarvan by making it 2 wins from 3 in the Walsh Cup. Micheál Donoghue overseeing a 120-15 point success for the Blues away to Westmeath in Kinnegad. Thomas Davis clubman Davy Keogh raising the green flag for the Blues. And here on the programme next Saturday morning in the company of Sean Lane, we'll have a comprehensive look ahead to Dublin's hurling year of 2023 and what it may bring for Dubs boss Micheál Donoghue in his first year in charge. Finally this week, the news wrap-up. AIG will end their sponsorship of Dublin GAA at the end of 2023. They've been proud sponsors of GAA in the county over the last 10 years across all four codes very significantly, and enjoyed unprecedented success with no fewer than 10 All-Ireland football wins between 2015 and 2020 in both men's and ladies football. And indeed, of course, 4 of those years were double successes as well. So really big shoes there for the Dublin County Board to fill over the next couple of months. Finally, in news section this week, the playing calendar for Dublin in 2023 was released earlier. The Adult Football League in the county starts on February the 19th, with the hurling version a week later. In terms of go-ahead championships, well, the Senior Hurling Championship is due to commence on the 15th of July, with the football version a month later.
Okay, it's NFL time now. Delighted to be joined again by Stephen O'Brien, and on the back of some ACCA success at last, Stephen.
I love the way you phrased that, Reg. Thank you. Good morning.
Well done.
But look, you know what they say, Reggie, a broken clock is right twice a day. So I think we just hit it. Now, do you know what? I'm proud of it, right? Because this has been a very difficult ACCA season for the NFL. It's just been weird. I mean, you know, we've sort of hit on the ones, because every year we sort of come up with the ACCA, and then there's some years that I would pick, say, when Brady was playing for the Patriots. Yes, that's how long I've been on the radio for. Mm. And we'd sort of picked the Dolphins to beat the Patriots, because for some bizarre, out-of-worldly reason, that would happen. And that's the ACCA, as you look back on and go, we got great odds. It was against the bookies. It was against the analysts and all that. We kind of did the same this week, well, last week, with the Bengals, because the Bills were sort of high favourites. I mean, you know, the Bengals were strong underdogs in this game. And it sort of, they went on to win prolifically, let's say. But it's a mad one, really, because when we get to this stage of the season, Reg, you could go either way. You know, you could pick the Bills and they win, and people go, well, of course. Of course. I mean, the Bills are a fantastic team. Or you pick the Bengals like we did, and they go, oh, well, they've won 9 in a row up to that point, so of course they're going to win the game. But according to the bookies, you know, they weren't favourites. So if anyone did put a bet on, and I don't know why they would based on my ACCA history this year has been awful, Well, then they came away with a bit of money at least. But a cracking game and sort of blows open the playoffs and the Super Bowl as to who's going to win it now.
Absolutely, yeah. And rookie quarterback Brock Purdy through to the championship round with the 49ers. Yeah. At the regular Jimmy G quarterback, he might find it hard to get paid now, even by another team.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I mean, you know, because look, the thing is, they have Trey Lance. They gave up a king's ransom for him. Mm. They've Brock Purdy. Jimmy G comes in, the old reliable, because we've been through the saga before, Reg, haven't we? Where a couple of years ago was Jimmy G went off elsewhere, then he comes back, and are they going to sign him again? You know, he expects a big payday. But when you look at what's happened with Brock Purdy, you know, he's a rookie. And to put this into perspective, he's reached the conference game, and to anybody who's not sort of, you know, well up on the NFL, this is the semifinals leading into the Super Bowl. There's only two games left, four teams, and the winners go on to the Super Bowl, not next week, but the week after. So no rookie has got through to the conference game and won it. Four rookies have done it, and a lot of these lads went on to win the Super Bowl after. So Brock Purdy, you know, not only is he a rookie, not only is he in a game that no rookie has ever won before, he's never got to this point. He was the last pick in the draft, as we've said now, for a couple of weeks. So, you know, you look at this, Reg, then, and you say, is he that good? Or are the Niners just coached so well that they have a great system, they're great players, and you or I, Reg, could go in and throw on a Niners jersey and play? Now, I think that's too simplistic analysis. But certainly people would look at Jimmy G because he came from the Patriots where he had success. And we heard that Belichick wanted Brady moved on so that Jimmy G could take over and the dynasty would continue. And then we saw Jacoby Brissett come in there and he did well. But people are looking at Belichick and going, well, that's the system. You know, Jimmy G was good in the system, and they're doing the same for the Niners. So, you know, Jimmy G is going to expect big money, but now they might look at him, Reg, and go, well, you know, maybe they can slot anybody in there. Mm. Look, it's going to be completely different this week because it's a conference game. As I said, no rookie has ever won it. You know, they have firepower there with the Niners, but they're coming up against an amazing team. So I think that, you know, it's going to be 0-5 for rookie quarterbacks. And look, the NFL, the way it works is you'll have a rookie in there. It's a great story. You and I are talking about it. Then they just go back to the quarterback that they expect to come in and have success that they paid big money for. We've seen it happen in the past. We've seen fantastic quarterbacks, sort of go around. Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of them. A guy who broke all the records with the Buffalo Bills, and when it came time to give him that big money, they went, we'll just fall back on the quarterback sort of that everyone expects to be good. But yeah, what a storyline. But Jimmy G, he might find it hard to get on a roster and get that big money, alright, Reg?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, there's a bit of worry for the Chiefs. Mahomes getting a bad ankle sprain, finishing the game in poor shape. How does things look? Does it torpedo the Super Bowl chances?
You know what, I think it does, and I've seen, like, you know, I've been sort of diving into the analysis with various people on various podcasts and stuff, and, you know, Mahomes is kind of the boogeyman underneath the bed. You know, you look at him and you write him off, and then all of a sudden he comes back and does the incredible. You know, an awful lot of his throws that he's made and plays that he's made, he just defies all odds. He really is the gold standard, but he has a high ankle sprain, Reg. So, like, this is, you know, a high ankle sprain is not a normal sprained ankle. It's no joke. It impacts the ligaments that holds your tibia and your fibula together. Yes, Dr. Steve is back. But look, it severely impacts your ability to move. So not only, you know, and his bread and butter plays are when there's pressure, the pocket collapses and he rolls out and makes magic happen. So that's not going to happen. And in fact, we got kind of a preview of that last week because, as you said, he got injured during the Jags game. He went off and was relieved by their backup quarterback and then came back into the game, you know, probably with painkiller shots and everything else. But he was a shadow of his former self, Reg. You know, he couldn't really move around. But, you know, kind of an underrated thing that happens when you get an ankle sprain like this as well is that, you know, he has big playability. So he sort of, you know, stretches the field, throws these massive bombs downfield. But you can't do that on a high ankle sprain because you can't get that leverage off your ankle as well. So really, this game, if he's going to have success, will come down to his offensive line, who have been fantastic, by the way. Mm. But if they don't hold up now for Mahomes, he doesn't have the ability to escape pressure. And not only that, Reg, and I think this is one that I don't see many people talking about, is that, yes, it's very brave of Mahomes to go out, and yes, it shows he's a team player, and he's still dangerous, and teams are still going to have to plan for him. But how much damage could this do if he goes out and plays on an injury like this? Because you can exacerbate it and it can lead to a serious injury. you know, like, I mean, you can really mess up that part of your leg. And players who have these high ankle sprains, it takes weeks of recovery. He's been practicing all week. So, look, if they lose the game and he doesn't play well, he's all off season to rehab it. But you don't always come back the same player. So they're risking a lot by playing him even.
Absolutely. Okay. The conference championships are here. Give us a quick rundown of what to look out for in that.
Yeah, so the games we have are Eagles, Niners and Bengals, Chiefs. I'll throw in my ACA as well. The ACA odds are quite low just because it's only a couple of games. But look, the Eagles come up against the Niners. They're minus 2.5. I think they'll win. The Bengals are coming up against the Chiefs. The Bengals, again, are underdogs by 1.5, which is really low, and I expect the Bengals to win. But look, the Eagles, they're a prolific offense and their defense is the best in the league. They're coming up against the Niners. And we haven't seen the rookie quarterback who I spoke about, Brock Purdy, you know, come under this type of pressure and prolonged pressure. We saw him get rattled last week and he was sort of, you know, making some dodgy throws. But that said, he still made some good ones. But one thing we haven't seen the Niners do and Brock Purdy do is come back from a deficit. So I think the key to this game is that the Eagles, as good as they are on offense, need to key in on defense. If they can put pressure on the Niners, well then, if they make the Niners go down to a big deficit, we haven't seen them come back from a deficit. So I think the Eagles are at home. They put pressure on defense. If they can rack up a couple of touchdowns early, I think it's probably too much to ask for Purdy to come back, because an awful lot of the strength with the Niners are on their prolific running back, Christian McCaffrey. And if that's the case, then you can't run the ball if you're short on time. And I think it might make stuff happen. The Chiefs, I'm picking the Bengals again because we saw kind of a preview of what happened to Mahomes in the Jags game in the second half. Also, the Bengals have beaten the Chiefs, Reg, three times with Burrow a quarterback. They have not lost once to Mahomes. Kelce is a menace for the Chiefs, but they can key on him now if Mahomes is kind of hobbled. And look, Joe Burrow famously has dealt with a shaky O-line. He got sacked a lot. He's able to deal with pressure. And they've won, I think it's now a franchise record, 10 games in a row as well. So they're going to look to make it 11. And they're going to thrive on the fact as well, Reg, that they're underdogs in this game. So I predict that the Super Bowl will be between the Eagles and the Bengals. And that will just be an absolutely mind-blowing game as well. But look, Reg, the thing is you could pick the other side and you could pick the other teams and it could be a blowout on that side as well. Mm. And you'd say, look, you know, that's understandable because the Eagles are the number one seed, the Niners are the number two, the Chiefs are the number one seed and the Bengals are the number three after knocking out the Bills who were number two. So the best teams in the NFL have ended up in this game. So, you know, this could really go either way.
Okay, right. Well, we've got about 60 seconds left, but I do want to ask you about Aaron Rodgers. Will he or won't he be back for the Packers?
Oh, God, 60 seconds, here we go. look, I don't know. The thing is, no news has changed. He had a conversation with the Packers. They've given him a big pile of money, you know, which is a three-year contract. He's on the books for $60 million next year, and he's even said himself that if he comes back, he's going to have to restructure that contract. I personally think that he will be back, even though people said that they're not going to be. They're going to transition onto their rookie quarterback, Jordan Love. Reg, here we are again. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers again. And I just think it'll be 2042, and we'll be doing the exact same. You'll be asking me, is Tom Brady ever going to retire? Or will Aaron Rodgers be back for the Packers?
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.